Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Rosabeth Moss Kanter wanted to write a book about leadership, but every time she left her house, she couldn't ignore America's ailing transportation system, congested roads, crumbling bridges, slow trains, and endless air traffic delays.
It's a subject that's hard to miss. From the winter breakdown of the T to those potholes you hit every day on your commute to last week's deadly Amtrak crash in Philadelphia.
Kanter says it offended her patriotic pride when she rode Shanghai's super-fast and efficient subway and maglev train. Why can't we have trains like that?
And so, instead of writing about leadership, she wrote about transportation.
Rosabeth Moss Kanter is a professor at the Harvard Business School, and she's the chair and director of Harvard's Advanced Leadership Initiative. Her new book is called Move, Putting America's Infrastructure Back in the Lead, and she's with us now. Welcome to Radio Boston, Rosabeth Moss Kanter. Great to have you.
I'm delighted to be here, and there wasn't much traffic on the way, too.
Well, that's good. Glad. You can't always count on that, as you know. Well, I want to start, if I could, with the recent news, this terrible derailment of the Amtrak train in Philadelphia last week. It was fatal. 8 people died. And a bunch of things jump out at me in this. We learned that the train was equipped with an automatic speed control system that could have prevented the wreck, but the system had not yet been put into operation. You talk about trains in your book and the need for better, faster, more efficient trains. What did last week's story sort of tell you about the state of America's trains?
Well, it told me 2 things. I mean, one is that we have the ability to do better, but we weren't using everything that we have. So that's really important to know, that we could have a better, brighter future on every form of transportation. But the fact that there wasn't the automatic positive train control installed, it also told me that we have a broadband problem because there were some issues with the wireless network. So we can't just talk about trains by themselves. Mm. We have to talk about telecom and lots of other things, and that we're too siloed. It also told me that we still haven't addressed the fact that there are too many curves because of tracks laid out a century or more ago. And then it told me something else, because so many people said, yes, but we shouldn't invest, the government shouldn't put money into it because they'll waste it. And that was very disturbing. That wasn't as disturbing, of course, as the deaths. That was truly a tragedy. But it was people accepting the status quo because they didn't trust investment in a better future when we could do it differently.
Well, I mean, let's start with the investment idea. I mean, I was in the reading that I was doing, House Speaker John Boehner said adequate funds were there. No money's been cut from rail safety, and the House passed a bill earlier this spring to reauthorize Amtrak and authorize a lot of these programs. Is this about money? Is this about committing the money that we need?
I think it's somewhat about money, not entirely about money. It's also priorities, because there is funding, yet there are so many things the money could be spent on. Now it will all be spent on positive train control, when money should be spent repairing old tracks, replacing tracks that run on wooden ties with cement, which Amtrak had done in other parts of Pennsylvania. We've had other terrible rail accidents. 2 years ago, almost to the day, 2 years ago, there was a crash in Connecticut that was not Amtrak. It was the commuter rail, but it tied up Northeast rail transportation for 6 days, and it turned out it was one small stretch of track with a joint that wasn't working. So what are the priorities? The pot of money might be there for any one thing. Is it there for all the things that you have to do? It's like fixing only one leak in your house when you've got 25 leaks and something else went wrong this winter.
You know, in your book, I was so intrigued. Early on in the book, you sort of lay out one of the problems, and you say that there's a lot of awareness of the problem, the plural problems, in whether we're talking about trains or roads or air traffic delays. And you mentioned that former Transportation Secretary Rodney Slater, who worked in the Clinton administration, issued a 25-year transportation plan, but it was put on hold. And you write, since these problems strike us every day, why is it so hard to make progress?
That's a really good question, and yeah. I'm It's hard to make progress. First of all, the plan was put on hold because the world changed in 2001 in many ways. The economy went sour, but also we had the terrible terrorist attack. And so money that might have been there was spent on other things. Military spending went way up, and we weren't spending on America's strength at home. So we now are getting back to recognizing these problems. Hopefully, they're in the air now, and we can finally have a national conversation about it. Meanwhile, enlightened mayors and governors have had this very high on their agenda. The problem is they can't do it by themselves without either national priorities and a strategy and a vision and also some additional sources of funding. But they've been trying. Mm. I mean, you see what Michael Bloomberg was doing in New York. Infrastructure was a priority. Infrastructure is a priority of Massachusetts governors. They can't always get the legislature to want to get the funding. And we have obsolete ways of talking about the money.
For example, what do you mean by that?
Well, for the Highway Trust Fund. Yeah. First of all, it's not just highways. It's also paying about 16% of it goes for mass transit. And that's actually because of Tip O'Neill of Massachusetts. When he was Speaker of the House, he pushed that through. But otherwise, it pays for highways. And it's a gas tax. And we know that people don't like taxes. But the problem with it running out of money soon is that the gas tax, maybe we should tax gas because we care about the environment, but as a funding mechanism for highways, it's obsolete because there are fewer people owning cars. Cars are more fuel efficient, so they don't use as much gas. Young people in cities often don't have driver's licenses, and electric cars are on the horizon. So for all of those reasons, you're not going to make that much money on a gas tax. We need other ways to think about what highways are and how to pay for it. And so I think we not only have aging infrastructure, we have obsolete ways of talking about it, thinking about it.
Really interesting. Listeners, we're talking to Rosabeth Moss Kanter. She's a professor at the Harvard Business School. Her new book is called Move, Putting America's Infrastructure Back in the Lead. We'd love to hear from you. Join the conversation. What are your questions about airplanes, trains, automobiles, roads, and what it will take to bring us really into the 21st century? How come the Chinese have those cool maglev trains? Why don't we? What's the blockage here? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I want to sort of come back to this issue that we've made reference to a couple of times, why the Chinese have these great trains and we don't. And on page 11, you have just this really succinct paragraph about how your sort of patriotic pride is sometimes offended when you travel abroad. Can you just read that?
Sure. For sharp contrast, take a quick trip around the world, whiz through the channel connecting England and France, ride a high-speed train in China or the maglev from Shanghai Airport to the city, get high-speed internet and cell phone connections on a remote mountain in Turkey, hop a constantly circulating speedy bus on a platform in Brazil, or travel in a driverless Mercedes in Germany, and see a future that the United States is barely glimpsing.
It's sad that that paragraph makes me sad, and yet I know, and you say this in your book, that the innovation, the brains, everything is here in this country. There just seems to be a disconnect between the innovation and getting it connected to these transportation systems.
I think that's the problem, because the driverless car, take the driverless car. Mercedes is actually deploying it a little bit more because of a different kind of regulation and attitude toward innovation. But Google is the leader at the moment in driverless cars, although every auto manufacturer is thinking about it. Hmm. So we do have the technology. The smartphone has the potential to revolutionize transportation, particularly on the roads, but also trains, as we were talking about earlier, airplanes. But we do have some barriers to deploying our own innovations. So in the air, for example, pilots. I was at the American Airlines Flight Ops Center. I thought that was the coolest thing. And pilots told me they want to use their cell phones. They want to use a tablet. And it took a long time for the FAA to come along with that. So some of it is we're not as collaborative. We don't deploy innovations as fast, but we have the technology. It's emanating from here. And so without a strategy, and you know what I think? The tech entrepreneurs have to be at the table in all these discussions. They generally aren't. It's the old established companies plus government officials, more bureaucracy, rather than getting those feisty, innovative, imaginative startup people who have ideas.
But I wonder, too, if one of the problems, and I'm just reaching here, but thinking again of these great trains in China. I mean, do they have an advantage because, in a way, they have sort of this idea of a centralized economy and the government can just say, this is a priority and there isn't going to be a debate? Whereas when Obama came into office, there was hope that, well, he'll at least be able to get a transportation bill. But because everything is so politicized, we can't even get a transportation bill.
Yeah, so right. I mean, but that's democracy.
Yeah.
And we're not ready to give up democracy. But it's also true that China can also just seize the land. And so they can build the train. They can put in new tracks. They get the land. They can move a million peasants from an area where they want to build this great new shining airport in Pudong. We don't do that. On the other hand, Europe is also democracy, and they do it.
Yep.
One of the advantages of Europe and Japan in rail and other things is that they had to rebuild after World War II. We were the victors. We were on top of the world, and we started transportation policies that actually were very helpful in the 50s and 60s in developing our economy and the life as we know it today. That was the highways. Meanwhile, Europe and Japan built trains. We didn't.
So they got to build trains that basically were straight, and so they could accommodate trains that moved to 225 miles an hour. We still have train tracks where they've got to slow down to 50 miles an hour.
That's so true. I mean, the high-speed, so-called high-speed Acela can't go at full speed, which is only 150 miles per hour anyway, except for a short stretch in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Otherwise, it has to slow down. And tragically, when it didn't slow down, it was a problem. But but the Japanese bullet train, not even a maglev, you know, where it's on magnets floating in the air, supposedly, the bullet train just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And I was impressed by the fact, 50th anniversary, I was impressed by the fact that it deviates from schedule on average only 32 seconds per trip. 32 seconds.
That's amazing. Rosabeth Moscanto, we've got a bunch of callers who'd like to get in on this conversation about the future of transportation in America and our ailing transportation infrastructure. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. Let's go to Janet, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Janet. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm such a big fan of Ms. Cantor's. Thanks for having her on, and
sure.
I can't wait to read the book. I wanted to make a point picking up on something she said earlier about, you know, being obsolete, and it's maybe even, you know, more political than that. But when I hear politicians talk about, you know, subsidizing mass transit, you know, we had the T problems this winter, and now the argument is, oh, should we be subsidizing it? Amtrak, you know, some of the, you know, politicians in Washington are saying, oh, well, we already subsidized. That is the wrong paradigm. It's a political thing to say. And until we change the conversation and talk about this as investment, you know, we're going to be arguing over pennies when really we need to completely subvert the paradigm that, you know, the politicians who don't want to, you know, to put the dollars into trains, into buses, into subways. This is the language that they use. It's powerful, and we have to fight back.
Janet, you put a great point on the table. Rosabeth Moscanto, investment versus subsidy.
Well, Janet, you're so right. And but, you know, every country, even the ones I've just been saying have better systems than ours, every country subsidizes passenger rail and mass transit. It doesn't pay for itself on the tickets. But those lines can be profitable on an operating basis if they're attractive enough to attract riders. It's the capital investment. So where are we going to get the capital investment? I think you're totally right. If we think about that, our national budgets, federal budgets, don't separate out capital investment from yearly allocations. Any company in the world would separate those out. So we do need different ways of talking about this, and we also have to think of these things as a national asset. It's how people get to work. It's how many children get to school. It's how we get to healthcare appointments. If we think about it that way, maybe we can change the conversation.
Let's go to David, who's calling from Lowell. David, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I think one of the ingredients that's missing that is probably the cause of public mistrust is the mismanagement of highway transportation programs, or transportation programs in general, but specifically things like highway programs. I bet you didn't know that almost 50% of highway contractors go broke and have to be bailed out by the government. Choices in terms of affordable methods of putting down highways are not often chosen because they don't require annual renewals, and that's not good for construction contractors. There are a lot of management issues that you're avoiding thinking about. It's nice to think about new and innovative and all that sort of stuff.
All right, David, we got it. So let's let Rosabeth Moss-Cantor respond to that.
So I also believe good management is totally essential. And if we had other ways of thinking about how we do it, what materials are being used? There's a lot of entrenched industries that think we should only be using concrete. When I've been hearing from people since I've been on tour with my book, I've been hearing from people who have new materials that are lighter, easier to deploy. Innovators will do that. In terms of mismanagement of funds, that's a public oversight issue, regardless of who does it. If we turned it over to the private sector, we'd also have mismanagement, as we had with privatizing the Chicago Skyway, Indiana toll roads. We can't privatize our way to a solution. If there isn't public oversight and if we don't have an outcry and think about efficiency in doing this, because it's our lives that are affected by how well this is done. I don't think the average American has really thought about highways and how they're built. I'm hoping we get this conversation going.
Hmm. I want to ask you, bring this conversation a little bit closer to home. And as you write in your book, you say Massachusetts appears often in this book, not because Boston is my home, but because the Commonwealth has been a transportation pioneer and hotbed of innovation. And yet there's a paradox that you write about, because in New England and in Massachusetts specifically, there's a lot of technology and willingness to experiment and innovate. Yet, you know, look what happened last winter with the T. So how do we explain? I mean, I guess we've been talking about this paradox. The innovation is there, the brains are there, but we don't connect it to our...
We have to connect it, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the issue. I mean, clearly with the T this winter, some management problems, some arguments about how bad they were or not. There are some financial and governance problems. And so we have to think about these agencies as not just backwaters, but something that everyone should want to have managed as excellently as possible. But the other thing is, we've also starved some of them for investment funds to refurbish, to reinvent, to use it. However, Boston and Massachusetts may be in the lead again, because the mayor's office of the new urban mechanics, they're creating apps, including my favorite Street Bump.
It's a great one, right?
Yeah.
So this pinpoints bumps and potholes and that kind of stuff on the street in real time, right?
Yeah, just from the vibrations on your car. You don't even have to call it in. So that's like only the beginning of what we might be able to do. And so that's why I say the tech entrepreneurs have to be at the table. And each one of these problems that we surface, there is a solution. We do have to set priorities and say which are the areas that we tackle first. And we have to show the public that something works, or they won't have any faith that we can do anything.
Yeah, it's interesting. To what extent, though, is the public... I mean, one of the points you make in this book is what's been missing is real public participation in this conversation, right? And why is that so important?
Well, it's, you know, I say It takes a village. It doesn't just take a village. It takes a cross-sector, multi-stakeholder coalition. Sorry for that phrase. It doesn't trip off the tongue. Because so many people have a stake in it, and if they're not at the table, they can hold it up. In Houston, 20 years ago, there was a vote in general for light rail in Houston, and then by the time they took a second vote, it was voted down because the communities through which it would pass hadn't been involved and didn't have a chance to talk about their priorities. And so it took another 20 years to get light rail in Houston.
You know, I'm thinking about last November, Massachusetts voters voted down. They decided to eliminate a provision that linked the state's gasoline tax to inflation. So, I mean, it seems like the public sort of needs to take responsibility for this as well.
Well, it is we the people, but I think that there's too much finger pointing and blaming in this whole field. You know, there's always somebody to blame, but that's not very productive. I think the public, you know, the lobbies against raising taxes or indexing it, I think the story wasn't told in a way that the public got. And there is this mistrust of government, even in Massachusetts. There is a mistrust that people will know how to use the funds well. We heard that from a previous caller.
Yeah. Why, this is sort of a big kind of question that wraps a lot of this up, but why is it so important that we get this right? I mean, I know it is important, but I want to hear you express it.
Well, I don't think it's just because we're falling behind the rest of the world as though it's all about a sports contest. It's because it affects our lives every single day, how productive we can be. How productive can we be if we're spending 38 hours a year on average stuck in traffic? How do we get our kids to a better school if we're in a neighborhood that doesn't have great public transportation and in high school they don't have a school bus? How do we get to healthcare appointments? What about the air we breathe because there's too much pollution? This is about our lives every day. This isn't, and we have to fix some of those things now, but we also have to have a vision of the future that it can be different, it can be better. And it's certainly a social justice issue because people who live in low-income neighborhoods often don't have access to good public transportation and they can't afford cars. Even in Massachusetts, where we care about people in less advantaged neighborhoods and have good, relatively good, except for this winter, I admit, public transportation, at least access.
All right. Well, Rosabeth Moss Kanter, she's a professor at Harvard Business School and the chair and director of Harvard's Advanced Leadership Initiative. Her new book is called Move, Putting America's Infrastructure Back in the Lead, and it's a call to bring America's transportation systems well into the 21st century. It's worth reading. Rosabeth Moss Kanter, thank you so much for coming in. We're very grateful.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Listeners, stay with us. A lot more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll be right back.